In a couple of minutes, we're going to be joined by a friend of his. But in the interim, hello, Corby. How are you?
Hi, Corby.
I'm your interim food commentator.
That's right.
Maybe.
I'm Marjorie.
That's the way I'd put it. Yeah, it's fair.
So, Corby, everyone is talking about the exorbitant price of eggs. We're not being able to get eggs at the supermarket. But there's a theory now that it's not just bird flu, but price gouging?
Price gouging. I love this story and the idea that the Federal Trade Commission under the current administration might go after some of these big cartels. So eggs are a cartel. There's four or five really big producers of eggs, and I think four of the five are private. But the one called Calmain that is public has posted, you know, ridiculous profits. So apparently egg production is only 4% lower this year than it was last year, but the price has gone up 82%. And so how do you explain that? Well, sounds like a cartel. It is a cartel, and they've gotten into trouble. Was it in 1989 or 1990? There was a judgment against egg companies because they were price fixing.
Well, what is happening? If the production's only gone down 4%, where are all the eggs? Where are they going? I mean, a lot of people can't get them.
Well, the companies are coming up with different ideas. They're saying demand is way up. We can't meet the demand.
Okay.
They're not actually giving plausible explanations. Prices have gone up for the maintenance of eggs. So many people have lost chicken flocks that the few productions are more expensive, although that 4% figure was really startling.
Yeah.
If the production's only 4% lower. So I didn't see many good explanations and just a lot of monopolistic behavior accusations.
Well, except there's more than an accusation. I think I'm right. Didn't the egg industry lose a lawsuit about manipulating the market and removing eggs a couple of years ago? That's one. And two, one more thing about Calmain, and this is in a story, AP News, to add to that percentage thing. In the last quarter, in the middle of this shortage price explosion, Calmain's profit was a mere $219 million. The quarter before, their profit was $1.2 million, a mere $217, $18 million more. I mean, to me, that tells a lot of the story, Corby Cummer.
Oh, absolutely. The judgment didn't come down until
got you all choked up.
But the price fixing lawsuit was brought in 2011.
No.
So I wrote in my notes, okay, it's going to be 12 more years before we can get a judgment against these cartels.
So the FTC can do something about this, Trump's FTC?
Oh, yeah.
Well, a Democratic
commissioner. Maybe they've all been fired. I don't know.
And saying, I want to look into this because this looks suspicious to me. And I thought, the Trump administration loves monopolistic practices. It seems incredible that they would go after them, except they're being so attacked, they're getting flack every day, including from Elizabeth Warren, about egg prices.
Talking to Corby Cummer.
Okay, Corby Cummer. So let's talk about these all these biologists and horticulturists and engineers. They're very expert at what they do, and they're fearing that they and more of them with unique and sometimes cases expertise going to be gone.
So it happens that the Times found one incredibly skilled biologist who's in charge of tree stone fruits near Davis, California, 7,000 varieties. And what you hear in this story is decades worth of experience trying to get these these trees to be more drought resistant, to have more varieties available in case of weather-related emergencies, which is what we now call climate change, in case production really drops. And she's worried about the maintenance of this very carefully maintained seed bank. She said she had to use bubble gum and elastic bands to keep going with limited federal funds. She got fired. And what you read, and my larger point is, this is horrifying, the loss of scientific knowledge. She's a PhD, incredibly distinguished. Multiply her times thousands of people who have been fired with absolutely no forethought. Incredibly bad repercussions will come of this loss of knowledge. What really stuck out to me at the end of this New York Times story about this Stonefluke Tree Bank near Davis, California, was the National Cattlemen's Association warning that the firing of scientists for the Meat Animal Research Center in Nebraska would gut research and cost the beef industry. Why is this so notable? National Cattlemen's Association is solidly Republican,
yeah,
strongly right-wing. They always have been, and that they are decrying these firings and saying, we rely on that scientific knowledge. It's being lost with this hatchet coming down. That's really something we hope the administration will read or listen to.
Well, you know, not only are they getting rid of the scientists, as you started to say, they're getting rid of the scientific knowledge. Farmers, smaller farmers in particular, environmental groups are complaining because the USDA is taking down any reference to climate change. And this is not just a political position, from what I understand, but they're dependent upon that research and information to decide how to do what they do in the context of a climate change, a climate, right?
And plant in the next few months.
Yeah.
And they need this information to predict. It's the nation's farmers and industry whom the administration says they wish to protect.
And by the way, in a lot of these farm states, as we know, they are deeply red. And we'll see what happens with Trump's support in those places.
Free speech, free speech, free speech. Taking away the necessary speech that helps farmers plan for the next harvest does not seem to be, it's crazy.
Can we bring your friend into this conversation
on
Zoom now? And his friend, by the way, is going to come in with his camera off. We'll explain that in a second. This friend is legendary Washington Post food critic Tom Sietsma, the man whose career Marjorie and I almost ended in 2016. We were in Washington to broadcast during Trump's inauguration week. We were in D.C., and we came within an inch of posting Tom's photo on the website, which would have been pretty much the end. Amazingly, he has decided to rejoin us. Tom Sietsma, it's great to have you on. How are you?
I am so glad to be here. Thank you. All is forgiven.
Yeah.
I doubt that, but thank you anyway.
No, just say most is forgiven.
Most is forgiven.
Mostly
okay,
forgiven.
Most is forgiven. Well, we're all big fans here at Boston Public Radio, Tom, and one of your very just recent columns had to do with your having a meal in the seventh floor of this concrete, steel, and glass building.
Yeah.
Very bucolic views for the windows, but very secret. Tell us.
Very secret.
Yes.
Well, I got lucky. I met this young couple at a party. Turns out they were young, married CIA agents. They were foodies. They said, have you ever eaten at our company? And I said, I have not. Our company. I said, I would not. I would love to. And so this began this months-long process by which I reached out to the PR types, the CIA, to get invited there. And it was not an easy thing. They did the research on me. Finally, I got invited. I sat down with eight people, some of whom had been former chefs there. It was great fun because the food was much better than I thought it needed to be. Certainly some of the best government issue food I've had, and I've eaten at the Pentagon, I've eaten at the White House mess, and I thought this was really delicious. But just the way in which one gets a reservation is kind of comical, because you have to be an employee of the CIA to get in. And getting in is no easy task. I had to be met outside in the parking lot, leave all my electronics, which is so hard for a reporter to do. I had to leave all these things behind. I was allowed to bring a notebook and a pen. But other than that, it was just me walking through this big, big complex. I felt like I was in a movie or something, because everywhere you turned, I couldn't even go to the bathroom without a minder. You know, it was one of those things. I was looking around like, oh, do I recognize anybody? It's on the seventh floor behind a door that looks a bit like a janitor's closet, right? And then you open it up and it looks like a very nice room, like a boardroom kind of situation. But what surprised me was the prices. They were totally reasonable, and the quality of the food was really good. I mean, they're making their own ice creams, they're rolling out their own pasta. They have things for people who might have dietary issues. It was as if anyone could eat there and find something to enjoy.
By the way, unlike when Tom Sietsma spent time with us in Washington at NPR headquarters, he didn't have to worry about his picture being taken, as you just heard. No electronics. And I love, Tom, you were only allowed to know the first names of chefs for obvious reasons. No credit cards, because then there's a paper trail. cash had to be paid. Food service workers had to be citizens. It's almost like a bad movie kind of thing.
It is a bad movie. I mean, where I was, and there's no tipping either.
Yeah.
Which I thought was really interesting because they're seen that the servers are seen as mission critical workers, right? and so they have very short hours there too. I mean, the restaurant is only open for lunch. You know, they do some receptions and things like that, but you can imagine not making a whole lot of money there, especially given the prices there. The entrees were about $15 to $22. I could get a very good bowl of soup for about $4. And what I loved though was I had these some of them undercover agents, sharing their food with me. They had been apprised about how I like to eat as a critic, so they were sharing tastes and everything. But what was kind of funny was that they view this dining room as morale, you know, good food for the troops in a way, because it's so difficult to get on and off campus there.
Yeah.
They want to have this available for, you know, sort of special occasions. But what I liked is that anyone who works at the CIA could book there. You know, it wasn't exclusive to executives or anything like that. And what was also fun, I heard from several agents that people use it for like date night, but it's date lunch. You know, they work really hard, and so they go there. And great views, good service, good food, no alcohol, no cigars, but you know, whatever. And
this is also a Brad Pitt movie. You mean inter-office romances?
Well, you know, husband and wife who work there, you know, might, you know, girlfriend, boyfriend, whatever. But what was also interesting, the day that I was there, I looked over and there was a baby. They have high chairs there. So you can bring family members there. This baby was like, someone at the table said, hiding in plain sight.
Babies, first name only though, Tom. I assume you knew that.
First name only.
Yeah.
And what was really funny was my minder said, you know, it would be really fun is to get your picture taken here. So they had a CIA photographer to take all the, you know, we couldn't bring a Washington Post photographer in. It'd be too much with all the equipment and everything. So they had a CIA photographer assigned to me. And she goes, why don't you stand up and put a menu in front of your face and I'll take your picture. And so I did in this room full of people,
great.
Most of whom were undercover, just laughing. Like, of course he has this. They had no idea who I was. I was just getting my picture taken in the agency dining room, right?
Pretty great.
Two things. How did they prevent you from tipping in cash? And did they ask to look at your notes?
They did not ask to look at my notes. I did a lot of fact checking, which was the most painful. And not because of my minder, but it was painful fact-checking in that any question I had to go through several layers of people. I mean, I couldn't even take a copy of the menu out, right? Everything is seen as having to go through a cleansing process before it goes to a reporter or to the public.
You know, Tom Sitzman, one of the things I thought was interesting was some of the other people who'd been there before you. You know, Willie Nelson, great musician, but best known as like a big weed smoker. And then
Margie, he's not best known as a big weed smoker.
He's both.
He's one of the most famous musicians in American history.
And he's like 90 and he's going strong. So that's an example for a lot of us. And one of the many actors who played Agent 007. We don't know which actor it was.
No. They couldn't remember which one, but apparently
how could they not remember?
I know, right? It caused quite a stir when he was there.
I bet.
I do know that. And you know, things don't go perfect either. One of the chefs who was at the table with me said, yeah, I remember the time, you know, we served Clams Casino to a group that was kosher, right? Whoops. And you can't just run out to the grocery store. It would take a full hour and a half to get in and get out. And they don't have cell phones in the building, so you have to call down. Like if something comes up with a freight elevator, you have to call back down to have it, you know, released and everything. It's an operation. And technology, obviously they have great technology there, but because you can't use your phone, I felt like it was in like 1980 or something like that with paying by cash and all of this. But what reminded me so much of my own job was like no one was using his or her real name on the reservations.
That's incredible.
Because they couldn't be traced back to another office. Obviously credit cards would be a dead giveaway.
You know, before you go, I'm sorry, Corby, go ahead.
You said something in your column about how restful and wonderful it was not to have electronics to really just concentrate on. people you were with in your meal.
That was one of the best takeaways, Corby. I have to say, it was so nice. Everyone was looking each other in the eye. There was just, and it felt off to me. I think we're all so used to being overstimulated either by music or loud conversation or our phones. And there wasn't that distraction. And even though lunch is timed to be in and out in about 45 minutes, it did not feel that short because we were able to accomplish so much in a short time, not being distracted by our toys.
Hey, yeah. Tom, it's great to talk to you again. I'm so glad you called in. Thanks so much.
Very nice. Thank you so much for having me. Good to see you.
Thanks for